Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of mcpmag.com, and I do thank you for listening. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of February 4th. Microsoft bids for Yahoo. Microsoft antitrust oversight extended into 2009. Google misses its profit estimate for the fourth quarter. And the internet cable snaps the web into many pieces. Before we head to the first Redmond Radio news segment, let's take a quick break. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. First, a note of thanks to everyone who listens to this podcast. Because you download, we continue to strive into the new year. And that means we'll continue to give away Redmond t-shirts to listeners in our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. And like we've been doing the last couple of weeks, we'll continue to provide the secret word of the week for the TechMentor All Access Pass giveaway. You want to know more? Be sure to listen to the end of the podcast for details. Now on with the news. Here's what made headlines over at redmondmag.com. First up, some surprising news that was hard to ignore, but I'll repeat it for those who've had their noses to the grindstones and haven't looked up. Microsoft has made a surprise bid to acquire Yahoo for $44.6 billion, a 62% premium over Yahoo's closing share price last Thursday. The offer, which was announced early Friday morning, would be Microsoft's largest ever, if not one of the largest ever in the computer industry. As of now, it remains to be seen whether Yahoo will accept the bid. Yahoo issued a statement saying its board will evaluate the unsolicited bid and respond promptly. Even if Yahoo were to accept that offer or a sweetened one, it's also uncertain what type of scrutiny a deal would get from domestic and foreign regulators. It also remains to be seen if other bidders will emerge. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, during a news conference, said that Microsoft has had interest in acquiring Yahoo for about 18 months, and that 1 year ago, Yahoo said it wasn't ready to pursue such a merger. While downplaying what impact the combination might have on enterprises, Ballmer suggested it could also bolster its Windows Live and Office Live efforts. The move comes as Yahoo's businesses continue to decline, and we'll have more news about that later, as well as the impact that it will have on Google. In related news, analysts believe that U.S. and European antitrust regulators aren't likely to prevent Microsoft from buying Yahoo, though scrutiny of the deal could drag on for many months. A major factor weighing in Microsoft's favor, said analysts, is Google's dominance in the online search and advertising business. The Justice Department said it's interested in reviewing competition issues raised by Microsoft's surprise offer. The Federal Trade Commission European officials declined to comment. Court oversight of Microsoft's market power, which began in 2002 after a landmark antitrust settlement, has been extended to 18 months. A federal judge early last week ruled that the settlement would remain in effect until November 2009. But a group of 10 states, led by California and New York, had originally requested the oversight be extended until November 2012. The court's ruling should not be viewed as a sanction against Microsoft, said U.S. District Court Judge Colleen Collar-Catelli. She said her decision was based on delays by Microsoft in filing technical documents related to the licensing of its software. Excel is one of the most commonly used software applications on this planet. It's also increasingly the most common and frequent target for client-side attacks, according to security experts. In the last 18 months alone, there were more than 33 documented vulnerabilities that pertained specifically to the spreadsheet program, a number Microsoft would neither confirm nor deny. While this seems like a large number, these are just documented cases. This prompts IT security mavens to assert that securing Excel, even above Internet Explorer, should be job number one where Windows programs are concerned. In mid-January, Microsoft's security group said there were continual attacks exploiting a flaw in most Excel versions. Microsoft Security Response Center said the attacks were mostly sporadic and targeted rather than running amok. The remote code execution exploit, which has yet to be patched, has been deployed using a bug found mostly in Excel 2000, Excel 2002, Excel 2003 with Service Pack 2, Excel Viewer 2003, and Excel 2004 for Mac. Redmond released its last Excel-specific patch in August of 2007 when security bulletin MS-07044 was supposed to have plugged the same such vulnerabilities, where the likely incursion methodology would be to attach a malformed document to an email or stick it on a website, convincing users thereafter to open the file. In the workplace, security observers say the most common titles to these types of documents read pending layoffs, executive salaries, management bonuses, and the words special project with the name of the company coming after it in specific cases where the attacks were more targeted. As of the end of January, Microsoft had not ruled out patching Excel, but still didn't disclose any specifics about its future plans. A spokesperson would only say that the company would continue to investigate the public reports and customer impact, taking the appropriate action to help customers when the investigation concluded. Don't want Office 2003 SP rolled out across your desktops next month? Make sure you don't have Microsoft Update set to automatic. Microsoft announced that it will be automatically pushing SP3 using Microsoft Update Automatic Distribution, starting around February 27th. According to a Microsoft Update product team blog, availability will happen gradually. SP3 was originally released in September, and it contains numerous security updates and stability improvements, according to the company. One of the most notable of these changes is that SP3 blocks certain older Microsoft Office file types. Redmond made it easier to unblock those files earlier this month. And in our last bit of news, do you want Vista without the bloat? Check out VLite from Dino Nuagic. VLite lets you pick and choose which of more than 150 Vista components to get rid of when installing the operating system. Components like Windows Media Player, the Welcome Center, audio and display drivers, .NET, as well as some others. You can also choose to protect certain files or other features while getting rid of unnecessary parts of the components. VLite works on all versions of Vista. Nuagic notes that using VLite will prevent the installation of Vista SP1. As well, all removals are permanent, which means you'll have to reinstall Vista if you have to restore. If this product sounds familiar, it's because Nuagic introduced a version of this product for XP when it came out. And that's it for news from Redmond. Remember to listen to the very end of this podcast to find out how to enter the t-shirt giveaway and the Redmond Radio Tech Mentor All Access Pass giveaway. We have news from The Wire next, right here on Redmond Radio. Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. Before we get to the newswire, here's an update regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. Check out the February 2008 issue of Redmond Magazine, which gives a final walkthrough of Windows 2008 before the big launch event later this month. And in Redmond Channel Partner, a deep dive into managed service providers. What they are, how they work, and how partners can profit by becoming MSPs. And finally, a reminder to listen all the way to the end of the podcast for details on how to enter our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway and the Tech Mentor All Access Pass giveaway. Lots of news from the 1105 media websites as well as The Wire. First, two cables that carry internet traffic deep under the Mediterranean Sea snapped, disrupting service since last Thursday across a swath of Asia and the Middle East. India took one of the biggest hits, and the damage from its slowdowns and outages rippled to some U.S. and European companies that rely on its lucrative outsourcing industry to handle customer service calls and other operations. While the cause of the damage wasn't yet known, the scope was wide. Traffic slowed on the Dubai Stock Exchange, and there was concern that workers who labor for the well-off in the Middle East might not be able to send money home to poor relatives. Although disruptions to larger U.S. firms were not widespread, the outage raised questions about the vulnerability of the infrastructure of the internet. One analyst called it a wake-up call, and another cautioned that no one was immune. The cables, which lie undersea north of the Egyptian port of Alexandria, were snapped Wednesday, just as the working day was ending in India, so the full impact wasn't apparent until Thursday. There was speculation a ship's anchor might be to blame. The two cables, named Flag Europe Asia and CMEWE4, are in close proximity. Just an update to last week's news regarding the potential layoffs at Yahoo. Amid all the hoopla created by the Microsoft bid for the company, lost in the message is that Yahoo did confirm the layoff of 1,000 employees. Yahoo indicated some employees whose current jobs are eliminated may be offered new assignments in other parts of the company. Further details are supposed to be released by mid-February. Yahoo expects to absorb a first quarter charge of $20 million to $25 million to pay for severance costs and other expenses. The cost cutting could reduce Yahoo's annual expense by more than $100 million, helping offset some lost revenue from a renegotiated partnership with AT&T to provide high-speed internet service. Under a new deal announced last week, Yahoo and AT&T will provide revenue generated through online advertising. Previously, AT&T had paid Yahoo a portion of the fees collected from subscribers to their co-branded internet service. Analysts had estimated that arrangement generated about $250 million in annual revenue for Yahoo. To ease the pain of the transition, Yahoo will receive an upfront payment of $300 million to $400 million from AT&T. Yahoo's profits have been falling even though advertisers are spending more than ever on the internet. The bulk of the additional online ad spending has been pouring in, of course, Google. Since we have Google in our sights, let's talk about the company's fourth quarter profit, which missed analysts' expectations. Google said last Thursday that it earned $1.21 billion, or $3.79 per share, during the final 3 months of 2007. That's up 17% from net income of $1.03 billion, or $3.29 per share in the same period a year earlier. If not for stock awards given to its employees, Google said it would have made $4.43 per share, a penny below the average estimate among analysts polled by Thomson Financial. Revenue totaled $4.83 billion, a 51% improvement over $3.21 billion in the previous year. In a more important measure to investors, Google retained $3.39 billion in revenue after paying commissions to its thousands of advertising partners across the web. The net revenue missed analyst expectations by about $60 million, or just under 2%. That disappointment will likely amplify concerns that Google won't be able to sell as much online advertising as consumers clamp down on their spending amid ominous signs of a recession in the U.S. Those worries have already contributed to a nearly 20% decline in Google's stock price in January alone. Let's have some good news. According to Sybase, 2007 was the best year in its 23-year history. Total revenues increased 17% to $1.03 billion for the year, with net income of $168 million for 2007, which is up 26% over last year. Sybase had only 2.8% of the database market at the end of 2006, according to Gartner, a figure that dwarfs its three larger rivals, who collectively account for 83% of all DBMS sales. And while Sybase has held its own over the years against the three, it now faces a new challenge from Sun Microsystems, which 2 weeks ago said it is acquiring open-source database vendor MySQL for $1 billion. Sybase said its database business grew 16% for the fourth quarter year-over-year. And while database software remains Sybase's bread and butter, the mobile tool, platform, and services are driving the company's growth. In a move that has bolstered its mobile business, the company acquired Mobile 365, now called Sybase 365. Run as a subsidiary, Sybase 365 is a gateway for wireless communications providers, SMS and MMS content, and enterprise services. The company is also planning on releasing new mobile commerce and risk analytics platforms. For the 2008 year, Sybase is predicting moderate growth. The company gave guidance of $1.075 billion to $1.090 billion in revenues for the year. While Sybase is looking up, VMware has seen its stock plunge by more than 30%. Last week, as investors reacted to a disappointing fourth quarter earnings report, the drop erased nearly $11 billion in shareholder wealth, which shoved VMware's stock down to its lowest levels since the IPO. Although the company's profit more than doubled to exceed analyst expectations, VMware's revenue of $412 million fell $5 million below the estimated guidance on Wall Street. VMware's forecast of 50% revenue growth for 2008 was slightly below the 55 to 57% range envisioned by several analysts. But VMware moves on the development side, with the release last week of a live version of Virtual Desktop Manager 2, which is now integrated with the company's virtual desktop infrastructure. VDM 2 lets IT pros manage thousands of virtual desktops at a time and creates new desktops in minutes, according to the company. And that's this week's episode of Redmond Radio. Before we go, I'd like to remind faithful Redmond Radio listeners, as we do every week, that you can win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly t-shirt giveaway. To enter, just send me an email with the new t-shirt giveaway phrase of the week, I want a t-shirt, on the subject line of your message, to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. And note the phrase is, I want a t-shirt, not Redmond t-shirt, as it has been in the past. Entries not sporting the new phrase will be ignored. By the way, that's also the address to enter the Tech Mentor All Access Pass giveaway. If you want to enter both the t-shirt giveaway as well as the contest for the Tech Mentor Pass, just send me one email with Tech Mentor Pass on the subject line of your message instead of I want a t-shirt. And put this week's secret phrase, Mark Manassi, in the body of your message. That's Mark Manassi, M-A-R-K-M-I-N-A-S-I, the name of one of our most popular speakers at the conference, who is expected to be there. Tech Mentor takes place March 30th through April 3rd at San Francisco's Moscone Center, and it's the 10th anniversary of the IT event. Because Tech Mentor is co-located with the VS Live Developer Conference, that means the All Access Pass provides access to both events. The Tech Mentor contest itself runs until March 1st and will pick a winner on March 3rd among all valid email entries. If you want to enter via snail mail, you can also do that by sending a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to me care of 1105 Media, 16261 Laguna Canyon Road, Irvine, California, 92618. Finally, congratulations to Dan E., who is this week's t-shirt winner. Dean's entry also gets him a spot among only a handful of people who've entered the Tech Mentor contest so far. And that's it for this episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo, and I want to once again thank all my listeners for your continued support of Redmond Radio through your continued streaming and downloading of this program throughout the year. See you here next week.